Continuing in mitzvah Shin Chaf Hei, 325, the mitzvah of dwelling in the sukkah. And it says, V'din schach pasul be'emtza o min asad. So we discussed last time the requirements for what kosher schach has to be, that it has to grow from the ground, but not currently attached to the ground, and it cannot be processed to the extent that it would be considered to be a kli, and thus receive tumah, be able to contract ritual impurity. So what happens if the schach that you have on top of your sukkah is not 100% pure kosher schach, but there are parts of it that are not kosher? V'din schach pasul be'emtza o min hasad. So there's a different... So if there is non-kosher schach, in other words, let's say you put a chair. A chair is not kosher schach because it's mekabel tumah. It's considered to be... it's obviously a kli. So if you put a chair on top of your sukkah, then that would be different if it was in the middle or at the edge. If it's in the middle, if the item was 4 tfachim wide, then that would pasul the sukkah. But by the edge, it only passes the sukkah if the item is more than 4 amos. Amos, 4 cubits is much longer. What's 4 cubits? A cubit is about like a foot and a half, approximately. We're talking about 6 feet, a large amount of schach pasul by the edge. So there's a difference between, as we'll see by other things, between a sukkah gedola and a sukkah ktana, a big sukkah and a little sukkah. If it has a... You know, you have only 7 tfachim in the sukkah, the minimum shear, so obviously you can't afford 4 amos of schach pasul. It's not going to work. It has to be a shear of regular schach left. But in any sukkah, if there are 4 tfachim in the middle of the sukkah, then it's going to be a problem. Yeah.
Okay.
In the middle of the sukkah, if there's less than 4 tfachim, so it depends on the exact dimensions. There are a lot of technical details. So... basically, we would try to avoid that. Yeah, there are many different opinions about the exact dimensions and how much you can put, how much you can sit under it. So we would try to avoid sitting under any schach pasul, even though mekel, then there might be room to mekel in certain situations. But you cannot sit under the schach pasul when it's on the side of the sukkah. That when the schach pasul under the side of the sukkah, so that's what's called dofen akuma. The reason that there's a larger measure of schach pasul that's allowed on the side of the sukkah is that you view the pasul schach as if it's a continuation of the wall. So what does that mean? So like you have your wall of the sukkah here, and then you have your pasul schach here on the side of the sukkah, like this. And then you have your kosher schach here, and then another wall here on the side. So this pasul schach here, whether it's a chair or a board or just a regular roof, it doesn't matter, anything that's not kosher schach. So it's considered to be as if this is the wall, and it's just bent. The wall is bent, and the wall really ends here. So it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So one of the received traditions that we have about the rules of mechitzas and of sukkah building is that if you have a wall that goes like this and then like this, so if you have up until 4 amos on the horizontal part, so it's considered to be that the wall is just bent, and that would be acceptable. So for example, let's say you wanted to turn this room into a sukkah, so obviously there's something above it, so it wouldn't work, but you took out these white things, and you left, say, 2 white things on each side, because you didn't want to destroy the roof so much. You took out all the white things in the middle, and then you put schacha on top right there, so this would be a kosher sukkah, assuming there weren't a shul upstairs. So this would be a kosher sukkah, even though the schach doesn't reach all the way to the vertical parts of the walls, because the walls are considered to be bent, and to the tip of the wall is really considered to be the horizontal part. But yes, you would not be allowed to sit under the part of the sukkah that is consists of pasul schach on top. That's a story, famous story in Masechet Sukkah, that Shammai had a grandson right before Sukkot. So Shammai felt that there was that even a little baby should dwell in the sukkah. So he removed the middle part of the roof of the room where the baby slept, and he put schach on top of that so that the baby should sit in a kosher sukkah.
But
so
that, if it's not bar mitzvah yet, it's not even...
He felt he should anyway. Yeah, it's not the normal.
At the age of chinuch, it's...
Yep. Not normative halacha, but that's what he said. V'din avir. So what happens if there's no pasul schach, but there's just empty space? So what's the story with that? Sheposel bein ba'emtza bein minasad besuka ktana. So if there's 3 tvachim of empty space, so then that would create a problem. And he says, the Sefer Chinuch says that's only in a sukkah ktana. So what do you mean that's only in a sukkah ktana? That's in any type of sukkah. So that's why the Minchas Chinuch suggests amending the text. And he says that really what he means to say is that it's a problem even in a sukkah ktana. That even if there's a small amount of avir, then it would be a problem. So we also, there are shitas that we always hear about this. So there are shitas that hold that even though it doesn't pass the sukkah, that if there is an avir, if there's empty space that runs the entire length of the sukkah, that you're not allowed to sit under that part, that empty space. So that's why we're machmir that when we construct our sukkahs, we try to make sure there's no empty space that runs across the entire sukkah. So let's say you have bamboo poles that are all going in one direction and they're lying across the roof of the sukkah and then forming the schach. So you would want to have at least one bamboo pole that's going the other direction so that there's no empty point. There's no point where there's empty space across the entire length of the sukkah. Yeah. And it's obviously also talking about that there is not a hechsher sukkah on either side. In other words, the proper wallage on either side. Because if that's the case, then you just, if there's a space in the middle of the sukkah, so you just view it as if it's two sukkahs. Mm-hmm. Right, so there's just one sukkah dividing half of the sukkahs. You obviously couldn't sit underneath it, but it wouldn't pass the sukkah because you have a kosher sukkah on either side. Yeah,
I'm sure that it seems as though the people are careful not to actually attach the schach onto the walls in any way.
Yeah.
I mean, usually they have like brackets that are letting it.
Sit on.
I mean, is that considered? We might be, you know, it's an extension of the wall, or is it like a, you know.
Attaching the schach to the sukkah, you get into what's called ma'amid. Mm-hmm. That one interpretation of one shita in the Gemara is that there's a problem to support the schach with anything that is not actually kosher schach. Right, so we don't really paskin like that, but the Rishonim say we should be machmer if possible. Maybe the some Rishonim say we should be machmer if possible to accommodate that opinion, which is why if possible, so you make the sukkah in a way that the schach is not directly supported by anything that's not kosher schach.
So in other words, you could have say 2x4s are too small to be possible as a clip,
right?
And have them be in say metal brackets attached to the walls, and then have the actual schach on top of the.
That's the normative schach. That even according to this chumrah, so you could have wooden brackets in a way that they're not makabel to them, or boards sitting in a way that the boards are kosher for schach. So the main schach is your bamboo poles or your evergreen things or whatever. So then you have the boards supporting it, and then you have metal brackets, which are puzzled to be schach, supporting the wooden beams. So yeah, according to the normative way we think about these things, so then that would be okay. But famously, the Chazon Ish had a chumrah. He says, what are you talking about? That's not... This is one of his real chumras. Usually we quote for kula. So this, again, he's going within the chumrah. Even the Chazon Ish would say, according to the strict halacha, this is not required. But he said, if you want to really do this chumrah of not supporting the schach with anything that is not kosher schach itself, so that wouldn't work because you would just view the boards as being part of the schach and then just resting on the metal poles. So that's why some people who are, like to say, they have a Chazon Ish sukkah.
Yeah.
So basically, they don't, they do not have any metal in the sukkah, basically. The whole thing is, okay, that's not the normative approach to follow the Chazon Ish, even if you want to be a machmir for the issue of ma'amid. But again, the whole issue of ma'amid, that the issue thing supporting the schach is only a chumrah to begin with, so we don't have to worry about it too much. Famously, the Briska Rav disagreed with the Chazon Ish on this matter, that this was not a problem of ma'amid, and famously, he used to put a lot of nails in his sukkah because he didn't want it to move. He was more worried about what we spoke about last time, that the wall shouldn't move at all. So he used to put tons and tons and tons of nails in his sukkah to make sure that it wouldn't move at all. So if you tie the schach down directly with a type of string that's makabel tumah, then according to the opinion of Mamid, so then that could be a problem, but that would only be a chumrah technically.
So what kind of string should you use?
You can use a not very processed type of fibers, plant fibers that are not... I don't know exactly how all these things are made and how it would relate to the kabel tumah, but if there are types of string that if they're very unprocessed.
Basically, if they're jute or
whatever it is.
Right, something like that.
You know,
yeah.
long fibers that are just sort of twisted together. But
something like that,
you're not,
yes.
It's not like you know, cotton thread, which is...
100%.
One time it's jute rope, which is actually quite strong.
Grapevine.
I actually tied the mat sides because it was... moved by wind a lot.
So that's not good. If the schach is being moved around too much, then it could blow off.
Well, that's why
so you have to choose your chumras carefully to make sure that it doesn't end up with a kula. Yeah. Okay. V'din peres aleha sadin mipnei hachama utachteha mipnei hanishar shepsula. So if you say, you know, I really like more shade than this schach provides, so I would like to put a sheet above my schach or below my schach, and I would like it to provide extra shade, and that would be a puzzle because that would be considered to be adding to the schach. That would be just like saying you want this sheet to be part of the schach, and it's like a roof, exactly. But or if you want to prevent, like if you make your sukkah from pine needles, so pine branches, and the needles are gonna fall into your food. So if you put a sheet on the bottom of the schach in order to catch the pine needles, that would also be possible because I would consider it to be part of the schach, yeah?
Okay. Is it possible, say, to take a plastic, you know, tarp or something like that, put it over the sukkah and so, you know, keep out the rain, and then when you're using it, take it off?
Yeah, that's fine.
People
people have that all the time. Really fancy people have, like, you know, a crank where you could remove the roof from the sukkah, yeah?
Okay.
I know some people who...
So evergreen branches that things are going to actually fall down into the sukkah. So there's a halacha that you're not supposed to use that lechatchila for the schach because you're going to say, ugh, you know, this is dripping into my food. You're putting yourself into a position where you're going to want to leave the sukkah. So that's lechatchila not allowed to be used for the schach. But if you use it as the schach, so the sukkah would be kosher after the fact. So the parasan lina osa says the sefer chinuch. So if you put a sheet underneath the schach, as we within four tefachim, which doesn't mention. If it's just for decoration, then that would be kosher. Shekol in ha'osak shera. So anything to make the sukkah more beautiful, if it's within four tefachim of the schach, so then it's okay. We know we have sukkah decorations all the time, which are not kosher schach. So it's supposed to be close to the schach. And if that's the case, then that would not pass the sukkah. And even if you would have this gorgeous sheet that you really just had in mind to make the sukkah prettier, even if you would spread that underneath the schach and the entire area of the sukkah, That would be kosher.
Only if it were just for decoration. And
that sounds fishy.
I mean, even if you couldn't see the schach through it, that doesn't seem like
that. That sounds very fishy.
Yeah, okay. So you're more machmer than Chazal. Okay.
No, I'm not believing.
So again, nobody does this. Nobody does this nowadays, but technically speaking, that would be okay. V'din sukkah al gabi sukkah. What happens if you have two sukkahs, one on top of the other? So what do you think?
Why
two sukkahs.
Why would you?
Yeah, what? Yeah.
What do you mean on top of each other?
You have one sukkah on the bottom and a sukkah on the top. You build a sukkah on top of a sukkah.
Yeah, how could you do that?
Why not?
Make sure the bottom.
How can anybody sit
With a ladder?
The lower one you're talking about.
How can somebody sit the top one?
So basically, the rule is
on their porches, and you have one porch on top of the other in an apartment house.
Then you have a real roof. Here it's talking about you just build your sukkah, you put schach on top, then you have another level.
But how can you sit on the top?
Well, you could have very strong schach. You could have, made of slats, you know, small little boards. You're not allowed to make schach with wide boards because you can get confused with that in a roof. But if you have a small board, a narrow board, so you make slats of the roof.
But the table you're putting in there...
Yeah, so basically, to summarize, the rule is that the top sukkah would be good and the bottom sukkah would not be good because there could be stuff on top of it. But there are certain situations where the bottom sukkah is good and the top sukkah is not good. If it's very short, then there's no way that the schach on the bottom schach would be able to support the weight of anyone trying to dwell in the upper sukkah. So in that situation, the schach of the top sukkah is just considered to be, you know, sort of together with the schach of the bottom sukkah, in which case the bottom sukkah would be kosher and the top sukkah would not be good. Yeah.
Sitting at a table.
Yeah.
If you're sitting at a table, the table itself is not, you know, is puzzle, obviously. It's not.
Right.
Most of your body is under the table, isn't it?
So we'll get to there in just a minute. Yeah. Very good question. Very good question.
That's really funny.
Very good question.
Good question.
V'din yoshein bakila. This is exactly what we're about to discuss right now, which is what happens if you're sleeping in a bed with a canopy. Obviously, if you put a tent right inside a sukkah, so that's no good. But what happens if your bed has a canopy on top of it?
In a sukkah?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
Well, Why would your bed have a canopy?
Lots of beds have canopies.
Why not? If you have a bed with a canopy, you know?
Mosquito netting, yeah.
Oh, right, mosquito netting. That's a good. That's a good point. Right. No, it's mosquito netting might be less of a problem because it has so many holes in it. Yeah. I really consider it to be protective, but that's a good point also. So, what happens if you're sleeping under a canopy? Shim yesh lo gag afilu gag tefach oser. So, if it has any flat part on the top of the canopy, even if it's just a hand breadth wide, then that is no good. Vim lav mutter. But if it doesn't have a flat roof, then it would be permissible to sleep under the canopy. So what happens if instead of sleeping on your bed, you want to sleep under your bed? That if it's 10 tfachim tall, that is sort of considered to be a domain unto itself. So if it's 10 tfachim tall, then it is it is forbidden to do so, because then you're turning the bed into a roof instead of its purpose as a bed. Vim lav mutter, and if it's less than 10 tefachim tall, then you're allowed to sleep under the bed in the sukkah.
Well, you're allowed to put a blanket over you, right? And that's puzzle is got.
100%, yeah. The afagav, the Sefer Chinuch actually makes that exact point, sort of. That's a slightly different case, but yeah. The afagav, the kinofos aser, afagav, the lo, gavo asara. So if you have a bed with a very permanent type of canopy on it, so then that would be forbidden, even though if it's not 10 tefachim tall. Shiny mita hoel gaba hi asuya. So the reason that we're more lenient by sleeping under a bed is because the bed is not really designed to be used as a roof. That the bed is designed for use on the top of the bed. You sleep on top of the bed. And the fact that you're sleeping under is considered to be weird. And you can't really turn a bed into a roof. Whereas this more permanent type of canopy on top of a bed is considered to be a problem. Yeah.
If the roof, in an apartment house, let's say if you have, somebody makes a sukkah on their porch, on their balcony, and the next floor does not, on the first floor, the person makes a sukkah on their balcony. On the second floor, they don't, so that by the time you get
to the balcony itself covers a sukkah.
The balcony itself is a roof.
You're sitting under a roof.
The question is, how far above your sukkah
roof? Unlimited.
That's a good question.
How far above your sukkah roof does the next
that's a good
floor
question.
Of the sukkah have to be?
Unlimited.
To be okay.
Unlimited. If you
suppose only the 15th floor had a balcony and you're
on
the first
floor. If as long as it's directly above you,
so
it would be a problem.
So if there were a balloon that were tethered right above your sukkah, then that would puzzle it.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Whoever thought of that?
That's why in Israel, in neighborhoods that were designed from Jews, they stagger the balconies, and everybody can put a sukkah on their balcony, which is a wonderfully fantastic idea. I wish in Washington Heights they had been as forward thinking. If the designers of Washington Heights 100 years ago had known that there would be so many Orthodox Jews here, they should have made balconies in all the buildings.
Done it so you couldn't.
And there are some neighborhoods in Israel. There are some neighborhoods in Israel which are currently being moved into by Orthodox Jews, which are originally not designed for Orthodox Jews, and they complain that they don't have sukkah balconies. They have regular balconies one on top of the other, because when neighborhoods were first built, so the designers said, we don't want the Orthodox Jews encroaching on our neighborhoods here, so we're building bedavka not sukkah. Well, they did it anyway. Okay.
I mean, you want to have each floor, an architect will design each floor to be the same. Why are you going to, it's kind of weird to go ahead and have
But that's
different places.
In neighborhoods that were designed to be from neighborhoods.
So assuming that the fire code allowed you, could you make a sukkah on a fire escape, if there were part of the fire escape above you? Is that, after all, it's not solid.
Yeah, but provide enough shade that it would be lovewood. It wouldn't even necessarily be lovewood, but it would provide more shade than.
Okay.
This would be like the rule. There are many details about if there's a tree above your sukkah and how much light it has to be able to let through in order to be kosher. We don't really have this problem in the Heights. Our sukkahs are so kosher that there's absolutely nothing above. Okay, there are no trees, but. That could potentially be a problem. If, the top floor of the fire escape, then you can make your sukkah on the fire escape.
Yeah, but except that there is fire code that prevents.
Yeah, except for the fire code.
So you're
anti-Semites.
Yeah.
So
it has a point. I was once my brother made sukkah. Was a student. They made a dormitory on top floor. They made a sukkah, and the schach was flying off the 15th floor.
That's not good. Right.
So imagine what was going downstairs, because you don't know where your branches are coming to.
No, that's true. If you build a sukkah in a high place, you have to make sure that it's very well tied down. Yeah, you might have to let go of the chumrah of the chaznish. You might just have to tie down your sukkah with whatever works. There's the famous story. This wasn't on the fire escape. This was, I think, just Tam on a roof. This is a famous story about of Yaakov Yosef Herman. There's a book about him called All for the Boss. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of it? Everybody should read it. It's a very interesting book about Jewish life in America at the turn of the 20th century. Very, very interesting. So it's a famous story about him. He was like a pioneer of, you know, real frumkeit in America at the time. Like really...
Where did he live?
It was on the Lower East Side. So he built a sukkah on his roof, and he was called in to court. So the prosecution was the police department or the fire department said this man put a illegal wooden hut on his roof. So the judge says, you know, what do you have to say? He says, yeah, I did. I put a hut on my roof. So the judge says, okay, it has to be gone. You have 8 days to dismantle your...
They give you a certain length of time.
Yeah.
By that time.
Yeah, so by then, fine. So he dismantled the sukkah. Okay, so there are ways to do it, but you have to make sure that it's done safely. V'aporeis sodin al shnei nakliten mutar lishon tachtov. So if you have a sheet that you put over just two poles, so that the sheet has no roof whatsoever, it just, you know, like a tent over the two poles, so then you would be allowed to sleep underneath. The fisha ain lo gag, it has no roof. V'hu arehu kemo she'ose chalal ba'atzila yodav she'zeh vaday mutar. So it's like your case, that you're under your blanket, and you're making, with your blanket, you're making a little tent with a blanket with your arms, and you're sleeping under it like that. So that's for sure mutar. There's not a real gag. You're allowed to sleep under that in the sukkah. So that would be perfectly acceptable. The same thing, even if it's sticking on two poles, it's just creating a pointed tent, then that would be okay.
So if there was like a beam between...
That would be a problem.
Would be a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
It would go to tevach.
Right, tevach, right, exactly. V'din sukkah gezula shekshera. So a stolen sukkah is okay. So what does it mean, a stolen sukkah? Lefi she'ein karka nigzelas. There's a principle in halacha that when you steal land, so it never becomes your own property. So certain other, so for material items, so when the original owner gives up hope of ever getting it back, so it becomes the property of the gazlan. He has to pay back money. He doesn't have to pay back the actual object anymore. So this so that does not apply to real estate. So if you steal land, even if it's many years later, the person gave up hope of ever getting it back, you've been living there for a long time, so then it would still not be considered to belong to you, and it would still be belong to the original person. So in other words, so the if you steal a sukkah, so it can't really be stolen. So it's not really stolen. Mm-hmm. Okay? So which is why also... that you're allowed to build a sukkah. So if you build a sukkah stam in the street, so even though you could be argued that you're stealing from the people in the, you know, the street belongs to the entire New York City. Mm-hmm. So you're stealing from anybody who happens to want to walk by that point in the street at that time. So that sukkah is still kosher because karkein and exelis. Okay. So it says that the assumption in a Jewish area is that people don't mind if you build the sukkah in not heavily traveled places of the street, but it's questionable whether this applies to non-Jewish places. You're supposed to really get explicit permission, but nevertheless, in places, if you don't get explicit permission, there are people who nevertheless build their sukkahs in the street, and that's considered to be okay. At least post facto, the sukkah is kosher. So not even if you stole the sukkah built, but if you stole wood and you built the sukkah out of it. So we know that when we were discussing the mitzvah of not to do gzela earlier in the Sefer HaChinuch, we learned that on a deraisa level, if you steal a beam and you build a mansion out of the beam, I mean, you build the beam into the mansion, then if there has not been yeosh yet, then and the original owner comes and says, no, you stole my beam, I want my beam back, then the robber has to demolish the entire mansion until he gets the beam. He has to give this exact beam back. But nevertheless, the Chachamim said, if you require this, then people are going to be less inclined to repent from stealing, so therefore we're going to say that even though on a deraisa level he really has to give back the exact beam, in such a situation he just has to give back the money, the monetary equivalent of the beam. So the same thing here. So even though a sukkah is more easily dismantleable than a mansion, nevertheless, for the duration of sukkahs, it's considered to be one's home. So therefore, if one built, used the stolen wood to build a sukkah, you don't have to dismantle the sukkah. You would just have to give back lemaisa the monetary equivalent. So therefore, they would not really be considered to be a stolen sukkah, and you would fulfill your mitzvah if you dwelled in that sukkah. V'din hamitztayer shepotur min hasukkah. So if you are uncomfortable, then you are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Shatar amra teshvu ke'ein taduru. So you have to dwell in the sukkah, meaning that it has to be considered a normal type of dwelling. That if the rain is pouring in the sukkah or it's mamish infested with mosquitoes, so if such a situation happened in your house, then you would leave your house. You would go stay in a hotel until the situation had resolved itself. So the dwelling of the sukkah has to be that one lives in the sukkah in the normal manner, the same way that one would dwell in one's house during the year. V'chol shekein chole shepoter gam kein mitam ze. That if there's an ill person, then he is also exempt for this reason. V'afilu misham shechole pturin. Now we're talking here not a chole she'ein, a sheyesh bo sakana, a dangerously ill person, but even a chole she'ein bo sakana, a person who's extremely ill but not going to die, but just very ill at that point in time, then he is exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah entirely, and those that he needs to serve him are also exempt. V'chol shluchei mitzvah, if you're on a religious mission, then you're exempt. V'chein chasan v'chol chaburaso, the mitzvah avdi. So since a chasan, a new groom, and all the people who are trying to make him happy are also exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. Not everybody agrees to this, by the way. Some people feel that you could have a Sheva Brachas in the sukkah. Why not? It could make just as nice a Sheva Brachas in the sukkah as other points. Not everybody agrees with this opinion of the Sefer HaChinuch, but that is the assumption here. So how can you have a chasen on sukkahs? You're not allowed to get married on Yontif and on Chol HaMoed.
You get married just before Shabbos.
You get married between Yom Kippur and Sukkahs. That's not normal practice in most places to get married at such
also
a time.
Friday morning, which is also not a normal practice.
Right. So according to halacha, it's perfectly fine. But again, it's not so normal. People are too busy with Yontif preparations. But if you get married right before Sukkahs, you have your Sheva Brachas on Sukkahs. V'din holchei drachim v'shomrei ginos v'fardesin v'shomrei ha'ir. So what's the din by travelers? Travelers. Okay, so the din is that you're exempt from the sukkah because the sukkah is a replacement for the house. So if you don't stay in your house all the time, sometimes you need to go other places. So if you need to take an airplane, so you're allowed to eat and sleep on the airplane because you wouldn't be in your house anyway if you needed to travel on an airplane or in a car or something, another mode of transportation where you couldn't have a sukkah, yeah?
So, the shulchan mitzvah, somebody's a fundraiser for like yeshiva, from Eretz Yisrael, they come here for sukkahs, then they don't have to, they're patur from...
If they're doing their job, if it interferes with them doing their job, really. If they're not actively fundraising at the time, then you would have to... Yeah.
I think with the chasan, I understand, because it actually involves also sleeping in the sukkah. And that would, I think, we only consider
eating. That's one reason why, in fact, if we're not sleeping in the sukkah, because you'd have to have your wife in the sukkah, and that would be problematic, right?
Well, it's not problematic. Not problematic, because she's willing to sleep in the sukkah with you.
So
enjoy.
Abbas is, chasan is more of a...
Right, so a freshly minted groom, is gonna be more upsetting for him to be separated from his wife during sukkahs. So therefore, there's more of a reason to exempt him from sleeping in the sukkah in general. We'll talk about sleeping in the sukkah a little bit later, and the reasons why many people are lenient about sleeping in the sukkah nowadays.
But that could be the reason why he says the chasan is exempt.
Well, he also says that the people who are accompanying him are also exempt. So for the chasan himself, but not for everybody else.
if you are flying on Chol HaMoed Sukkos,
yeah.
should you like avoid like you know washing or eating you know food where you would you know be?
You don't really need to. You don't really need to because Holchei Drachim are Patur min HaSukkah. Yeah, you don't really need to do that. The question is, so what do you mean? So all these people are going to Hershey Park. So while they're in the car to Hershey Park, they can wash and they can sleep and they can eat whatever they want because they're Holchei Drachim. So that seems a little bit hard to imagine. So that's why a lot of poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman, said that if it's purely for pleasure, your trip, then you're not exempt from the sukkah. Who says you should take your trip now? Stay and sleep in the sukkah. It has to be. There's some necessity, either for even for business. There has to be something that actually necessitates you to leave, and that's why you would be exempt. Now, everybody agrees with that. Some poskim say that, no, it's an absolute rule, that if you're on, you don't have to stay home. You know, in other words, if you're at home, you're not going to be confined to your house. You sometimes take trips. So the same thing, too. If the sukkah was to replace the home, then I want to take a trip now. I don't want to be home near my sukkah. So some people say that even if you're on the way to Hershey Park, then you're allowed to wash and sleep in the car. So also these people who have to watch the orchards and the gardens and the city. So, you know, these people who you maybe take cat naps in various places, but they can't take too long a nap. They certainly can't build a sukkah so that their location will be immediately recognizable. People who are on guard duty are also exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah.
The soldiers, by the way. But,
yeah, same thing, sure. About it, exempt. Yeah, that's much more important than people who are watching, you know, orchards to make sure that nobody steals the fruit. V'din yardu gishamim. So what happens if rain falls in the sukkah? So we already mentioned in general the din of mitztayer. So the din of rain coming down is a part of the ptur, the exemption of a mitztayer, but somebody who's uncomfortable. But you're not allowed to run out of the sukkah the moment you feel the first drop. That you're not allowed. It has to be enough rain coming down that would affect the taste of food. Doesn't have to be necessarily the food that's in front of you right now, but if enough rain is coming down that if it gets into any type of dish that's sensitive to extra water, then that would be an exemption for one to leave the sukkah. That applies for eating, but for sleeping, even if it's just a couple drops, so most people will be more sensitive to that, so therefore you'd be allowed to leave, you're allowed to get up from sleeping in the sukkah and go into the house, even if only a small amount of rain came into the sukkah. So what happens if rain is predicted?
No, until it comes. You know.
So for eating, okay, so you're a conscious and you go into the sukkah and you go out of the sukkah if necessary. But if you're sleeping, so you go into the sukkah, then you're going to be woken in the middle of the night by the raindrops and you might get drenched by the time you manage to get into the house.
So
if there's a very strong prediction of rain in the middle of the night on any given night of sukkah, so does that exempt one from sleeping in the sukkah that night?
Yeah.
You think yes?
Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. So Rav Yoshev said no, because he said it's like Nevi HaSheker. It's like a false, the weathermen are like false prophets. So you never know if they're really going to be right or not. So therefore, there's no exemption until the rain actually comes down just because rain is predicted. But I'd say if you really believe in the weather forecast, and even at the beginning of the night when it's not actively raining, you're sitting there in your bed and you can't fall asleep because you're like, oh, did I feel a raindrop? Oh, no, that wasn't a raindrop. Did I feel, is this going to rain any second? That's mitztayer. So it depends on your personal approach to the weather forecast, that if it really bothers you, so probably you would be exempt. But if it doesn't bother you, then you'd probably not be exempt until the rain starts falling.
But wait.
Yeah, I think also it depends on the time when the prediction was made. Right now, predictions are so much more better than before.
Yeah.
You have radars, you have everything. Like, it was predicted it's going to rain today. The rain is coming, they see the rain on the radar. What else do you need?
Sometimes they're wrong.
Have like forecast for 7 days, yes, but when you see the forecast from really one day to the other, it's very different from say, okay, on Tuesday it's going to rain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that you don't know.
Right.
There is probability.
For right, that. Right. Yeah, but sometimes even a couple hours before, it'll say 30% chance of rain.
Well, that's not
okay. How do you believe weather at all, though? You know,
they're predicting it. There are certain natural phenomena that indicate it, but that's not the ultimate source of the rain, yeah? Okay, you should stop looking at weather forecasts. You want to be extra from? Enjoy. Okay. V'din sukkas ganvach v'rakvash shikshera. So sukkah, what's the sukkas ganvach and rakvash? What does that stand for? It's an acronym. Goyim, non-Jews, Nashim, women, Behemos, animals, Kusim, Samaritans, Roim, right, that's the Rock of Ash part, shepherds, Kayotzim, people who are guarding figs. Then Burgonin, who are the people who watch the city, and Shomrim or Shomrei Peros, people who are watching the fruits. So those type of sukkahs are kosher. So who cares? What do you mean? Those type of sukkahs are kosher. But what do you mean? Whoever encounters a sukkah of a behemoth. The point is that the sukkah does not have to be made l'shem sukkahs. You don't have, not like matzah. That it's a shayla exactly what that means. The matzah has to be made l'shma, but it's even matzah has to, according to the normal assumption, has to be made l'shem matzah's mitzvah. So when you eat your matzah on Pesach, on the first night of Pesach, so it has to be made l'shma. As you're baking it, you have to have in mind that this is matzah is going to be used for the matzah at the Seder. So that's not what happens when you build a sukkah. So when you build a sukkah, if you wander, if you buy a house and you move in shortly before Sukkot, and you see that there's a gazebo in the backyard. The previous owners were not Jewish. A gazebo in the backyard that happens to be a kosher sukkah. They like decorative little booths that they made walls, and then they put the plants on top to make it look nice. And you walk; it just happens to be a sukkah that's built according to halachic specifications. That would be kosher for use on Sukkot. So that's what this is teaching us, that this doesn't have to be made lishma.
Doesn't have to be
You're right that there is a preference, a mitzvah min hamuvchar. Different posts can take this more seriously than others, but we try very much to accommodate the opinion that at least there's a mitzvah min hamuvchar, but some people feel that it's absolutely required. I think it's not the psak of the Shulchan Aruch really, but we try to do it that we try to have at least a Jew at least lift up the schach a little bit, mm-hmm. and put it back down specifically for the sake of the mitzvah. Although for these poskim who just say stam that sukkahs ganvach and rakvash is kosher, you get the impression that that's not required. But there's a discussion in the Gemara about it, so we try to accommodate that idea that lechatchila there should be part of it made by a Jew l'shem the sukkah for use on Pesach, but it doesn't have to be built that way. You just have to put a little bit of the schach on top. Fine. But then, atze sukkah, so the wood that's used to build the sukkah, sha'asurin kol shiva midaraisa, that you're not allowed to use it for any other purpose for all 7 days of sukkahs. Over yom hashmini, b'tshi bagola, asurin mishum muktza. That the principle is as follows. So when you're transitioning from the seventh day of sukkahs to shmini atzeres, so you have a period that's called bein hashmashis, between sunset and when three stars come out. So we treat that as if it's a doubt as to whether it's still daytime or it's already nighttime halachically. So during that time, the transition between the seventh day of Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, is the sukkah allowed to be used for another purpose or not allowed? It's not allowed because still Bein HaShemashos, it might still be the seventh day of Sukkot. So since that period of Bein HaShemashos overlaps with the beginning of Shmini Atzeres, we're not sure whether it's the end of Sukkot or the beginning of Shmini Atzeres. So since it was forbidden to use the sukkah for another purpose, or the boards of the sukkah, or the schach of the sukkah at least, different shitas as to whether it applies to the walls as well or just to the schach, then that would be, since it was muktzah during Bein HaShemashos of the beginning of Shmini Atzeres, so it's muktzah for the entire Shmini Atzeres as well. And that would apply again to the second day of Shmini Atzeres, meaning Simchas Torah, outside the land of Israel. Yeah?
If a sukkah were destroyed by the wind, for example, yeah. Completely destroyed, you know, then would it be possible Chol HaMoed to use it for firewood or something like that?
I don't think so. Once it's muktzah, it's muktzah.
Oh, okay.
Not a sukkah, but the boar, it had a shame sukkah on it already. Yeah, you'd have to wait till after sukkah in order to use it for something else. V'noyei sukkah asurin mishum bezuyei mitzvah. So the things that are used to decorate the sukkah are also asur because it's considered to be denigrating for the mitzvah. Mishem haramban zichron bracha. That's at least what the Ramban says. V'yaseh rubei prateha mivarim b'masechta Habenuya alze vehi maseches sukkah. And the rest of the details are found in the tractate that deals with the laws of sukkah.
There are other details. Tons.
We barely scratched. This is a tiny discussion. You have a whole maseches sukkah that's, you know, a fat volume, and the whole tons of simanim in the Shulchan Aruch with all the exact details of how to build the sukkah. What if the schach is like this? What if the schach is like that? What if the walls are like this? What are the tons and tons and tons of details? So we try not to get involved in this. We try to build our sukkahs in a way that's 100%. You don't have to worry about all the details of the halacha. You put all schach kosher. You use three full walls, at least maybe four walls. You're trying not to get involved in this. But if you're using any of these things like dofen akuma, the bent wall, or some of the schach is puzzle, or this or that, then yeah, it's important to consult with halachic authority to approve your sukkah before you dwell in it in sukkahs. It's very easy to make a mistake. Binoheges b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zecharim avalo b'nekevos. This is a mitzvah saseisha zman groma, a time-bound positive commandment. So therefore, women are exempt and only men are obligated to perform it.
So wait a second. So the sukkah gets too crowded. Why don't we just say, okay, women and children out of the sukkah, right?
Okay, you could.
We don't seem to do that in that day and age.
Women now, the whole family wants to eat together. So some women will say, great, I can go into the house. And some women will say, you know, I'm offended, women, you're kicking me out. I want to perform the mitzvah. It's perfectly wonderful if they want to volunteer to perform the mitzvah of sukkah, but it's not absolutely required. That's why if there really is limited space in the sukkah, so obviously, unfortunately, the women are first to go.
What makes it a mitzvah?
Fine. So yeah, that used to be the case in the olden days. So a lot of when there's limited space, so the women wouldn't sit in the sukkah. My father grew up on the west side, so he says when he was growing up, women never sat in the sukkah. It was a men only sukkah. They would build a sukkah in the alleyway between two buildings, and the women would send food down in a dumbwaiter or a pulley type of system from the window of the kitchen down a couple stories to the sukkah to the men in the sukkah. We've never heard of women sitting in the sukkah until a certain point in his life. Ve'over al zeh ve'lo achal achila shel pas besukkah, o shelo yashin ba v'afilo shein asarai, v'u shelo yecholo mitzar, poter machmas edvarim shamarnu bital asei zeh. You neglected to perform this positive commandment if, A, one category is, you didn't eat in the sukkah. So you didn't eat in the sukkah. So what are you required to eat in the sukkah? So essentially, the thing that you're required to eat in the sukkah is what's called an achilas keva, that a set meal, like what's English? What's a good English word for this?
Not a formal meal, not a snack.
Yeah, a formal meal, not a snack, which in halacha is defined as bread. So nowadays you could say, yay, you know, we barely ever eat bread. You know, we just have, on Chol HaMoed, we're just going to eat our tuna fish salad and our steaks and all these things. So great, we never have to eat in the sukkah. So that is very, very, very unclear, because nowadays, A, there are poskim even in the classical Sfarim, that's many poskim, that say that if you have a formal meal and it just happens not to be bread, if you have fish and cheese, or at a different meal, obviously meat. So then that would constitute a formal meal, and that would be one would be required to eat that in the sukkah. And certainly nowadays, when people eat less bread than they used to, that it's certainly one should be machmir to eat formal meals, no matter what they consist of. All the meals of sukkahs in the sukkah. If it's really like a snack, if you don't eat any formal meals and you just eat. Just eating, snacking on granola bars all day, or you're having a little bit of a little piece of chicken drumstick at the fridge and not sitting down to eat a formal meal, so then that would not require a sukkah. So if you're doing that all day long, so you really could get out of the mitzvah of sukkah. But if you're sitting down to a formal meal, even though there are many classical poskim who say that it has to be bread in order to be a formal meal, nevertheless, certainly nowadays, and maybe even the olden days, that would not be appropriate. We're also machmir that mizonos, that we eat, if we eat a size of a kibetza, an egg's volume of cake, that would also require a sukkah. That's also considered to be an achilas keva. Some poskim are machmer on drinking wine, that if you're sitting around people with other people and you're just drinking wine, that would also require a sukkah. So there's room to be made about all these things, especially when it's difficult, but the formal meals definitely require a sukkah. We even have the minhag that we don't make the bracha on the sukkah unless we're eating a formal meal. So if you don't eat formal, if you don't eat bread really, you don't have at least, then you really are mevatel the bracha, which is no good. According to the Gemara says that you make the bracha on the sukkah every time you go in.
Every time you walk in?
Every time you walk in the sukkah, you make the bracha leisha b'sukkah, then you go about your business in the sukkah. Then when you leave the sukkah with a hesech hadas, and you have in mind to stop fulfilling the mitzvah temporarily, then when you next time you come back into the sukkah, you make a new leisha b'sukkah. So that's not the normally accepted practice, because the Rishonim said that the minhag was that since they didn't sleep in the sukkah, which we'll get to a little bit later, so the activity that was done in the sukkah was eating. So they used to eat bread more, so they used to have only make the bracha on the sukkah when they had their bread meals, and they did not make the bracha at other times. So the question is, so what about nowadays, that we barely ever eat bread, or what happens if you spend the whole day in the sukkah and you don't eat bread? So some posts can feel that the minhag never applied in such a situation. They say nowadays, if you're spending the whole day in the sukkah but you're not eating bread, you should make the bracha anyway, like the Gemara says to do. But the minhag nowadays, anyway, seems to be mostly that we keep the old practice that we do not make the bracha unless we're having a bread meal. That's why it's kedai also to wash during sukkahs, because then you get into this problem that even if you have a formal meal without bread, then you, according to these opinions, so you wouldn't make the bracha.
If you go into the sukkah in order to sleep there, do you make the bracha?
So the minhag is not. The minhag is not, even though according to the Gemara, so really you should. Yep.
Yeah, kind of like in the worst situation in both cases, because you don't eat bread because of the health reasons. At least I don't eat bread because of the health reasons. But then you go into sukkah and you're required to eat bread. So it's by itself, it creates lots of...
I mean, but you're not really required to eat bread except for the first night. You could go the whole sukkah without eating bread, in theory.
It's kind of like, okay, so if you follow old minhag that you only say bracha because you eat bread... But you don't usually eat bread. It's not your custom usually to eat bread.
Yeah, so there's what to discuss. That maybe you should make the bracha even without eating bread. Yeah. It's something to consider. Fine, but technically a snack you're allowed to eat outside the sukkah, which does not apply to sleeping. Oshelo yashin bav afilu sheina sarai. So if you're required to sleep in the sukkah, every minute of sleeping has to be in the sukkah. There's no such thing as Shena Sarai. Even though you think, what, if I'm just sitting in my chair and dozing like that, so then that's a Shena Skeva? No. That does not apply to sukkahs, and you have to sleep all the time in the sukkah. So in many ways, sleeping in the sukkah is more stringent than the requirement to eat in the sukkah. So why is everyone more mikel about sleeping in the sukkah than about eating in the sukkah? Many reasons were given. So one reason was that in Europe, many places in Europe, it's too cold. It's too cold to sleep in the sukkah. So therefore, they were considered to be mitzdayer, and they did not sleep in the sukkah. That's one reason. But does that really apply in New York? Most of the time, it's not too cold to sleep in New York in the sukkah. But okay, people have already gotten entrenched in them that they don't sleep in the sukkah. Next reason. What's the next reason?
Dangerous
to sleep in the sukkah? Why?
People could come and attack.
Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davara. There's a principle that if you're doing a mitzvah, so nothing bad is going to happen to you. It doesn't mean you should be, you shouldn't take precautions. That if you live in Harlem, you know, and you're sleeping outside, then that's probably too dangerous. But you live in a normal suburban neighborhood, safe neighborhood, so we have a guarantee that you have a mind to perform the mitzvah, so nothing bad is going to happen to you, that the merit of the mitzvah is going to protect you. And here in the Heights, and we have in Broyer Sukkah and YU Sukkah, there's actually a guard outside. So there goes that excuse. Okay.
Yeah, the wife is the one of the things that the wife, when the man is married, so that's... the wife would not follow you into the sukkah.
That's one thing. So teshvu, so according to some... teshvu ke'ein taduru, the fact that you're supposed to dwell in the sukkah the way that one dwells in one's house. So since married couples normally sleep together in one room, in fact, the Gemara has very harsh words about someone who disturbs a married couple from sleeping together in the same room, even when she's a nida, even when they're not actually going to be physically intimate. But the married couple always has to sleep together in the same room. It provides a certain measure of comfort and intimacy, even without physical touching necessarily. But that's one excuse. So many poskim don't like that excuse either. They say, okay, but that doesn't apply to the mitzvah sukkah. that if you're okay sleeping without her during that time, and so then you should be required to sleep in the sukkah. But some people say it's an absolute rule that if your wife is not willing to follow you into the sukkah and sleep with you in the sukkah, then that would not be considered teishu kein tadur, and you'd be exempt from the sukkah. Again, it's not. These are one of all the reasons that the achronim are searching why the minhag was not to sleep in the sukkah, but that this is not necessarily the greatest lechatchila type of reason. So what's an answer to that? Your wife should sleep with you in the sukkah. If you have a separate sukkah, so if she's willing to sleep with you in the sukkah, then that is the best idea. But if she's willing to be mevater, she's willing to let go of sleeping with you for this 1 week and allow you to perform the mitzvah. The Bikur Yaakov has a line like this. The Bikur Yaakov was the first sefer that was published by Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger, the Aruch Laner. So it's an excellent work on the laws of sukkah and lulav, quoted all the time in the Mishnah Berurah. So he writes there that if a woman is really religious, then she is going to allow her husband to sleep in the sukkah on sukkahs, even though it's not her first choice. But again, the best thing is to sleep with one's wife in the sukkah. The poskim say that if it really is one night, like if it's the night that the wife is supposed to go to the mikvah, and you're going to come inside to the bedroom for that anyway, so then you don't have to leave, and if you fall asleep right after that, so then you could continue sleeping in the house. But that would be okay in the sukkah as well. It's mutter to have tashmish amita, to have marital relations in the sukkah, provided that privacy is accorded as would be proper. Okay?
Kind of. Here in New York, one of the things that people don't get is it's not safety. You sleep outside, there are rats, there are roaches, there are different things which are...
I mean, I'd say even more than that. So here in the city, so it's very difficult to sleep in the sukkah because there's a lot of noise.
Yeah.
You know, the sukkah, most people don't have private sukkahs. You know, if you have your in your courtyard of 100 Bennett, so people have private sukkahs, so there you could sleep. I would say if I lived in 100 Bennett, I had a sukkah there, I would sleep there also. Blue Netter. But here, the only sukkah, if I'm using the YU sukkah, a huge public sukkah, so I want to go to sleep, people are going to be eating still, there are going to be lights, there are going to be cars outside,
sirens,
cars, all these things going on. So that's why, unfortunately, in the city, so I don't sleep in the sukkah, but if I lived in the suburbs, so Blue Netter, I would. And I have in the past. But technically speaking, sleeping is more stringent than eating, and if possible, it's certainly absolutely proper to sleep in the sukkah. There's the famous...